Hey everybody, this is Dave with All Independent Renal Podcast. Before we get this episode started with Elephant Rifle, I just wanted to ask if you could all subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast feed and leave us a rating or a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, this is Dave. Welcome back to the All Independent Renal Podcast. Thanks again for listening. This next episode is with the band Elephant Rifle. They're a band from Reno. They've been together for about 6 years, and we're just listening to one of their tracks off their most recent album called Ivory. And you can find their album on their Bandcamp page at elephantrifle.bandcamp.com, or you can pick up one of their records or CDs or tapes. I don't know if they have tapes. I think they do. Anyways, go buy their shit. They have a show coming up at the Saint here in Reno on December 23rd with Moondog Matinee. It's going to be a great show, and if you're listening to this episode in time, please go check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. So anyways, we got most of the band to come down. Brad Bynum, the vocalist, and Clint Nurberg. I hope I said that right. And he's their guitar player, Mike Mayhall on bass. And their drummer, Mike Young, couldn't make it, but that's okay. We had a great time just hanging out, having some beers, talking about their music. So, let's get into it. Here's our episode with the band Elephant Rifle. With Elephant Rifle.
Okay.
And that was Brad. Is it pronounced Bynum?
Bynum, yeah.
Brad Bynum. So we got Brad Bynum here, the vocalist for Elephant Rifle.
Hello.
As well as the other fellas for Elephant Rifle. We got Clint over here, too.
Hi, I'm Clint Newberg, guitar player, Scorpio.
All right.
Hi, I'm Mike Mayhall, bass player, also Scorpio.
All right. And who couldn't make it tonight?
Our drummer's Mike Young. He couldn't make it tonight.
I just texted Young and said, what's your sign? So we'll have a result for that hopefully soon.
All right, Mike Young will be live via phone text.
Far out.
Yeah. So who is Elephant Rifle? What are you guys all about?
We're a hardcore band from Reno. We've been a band for 6 years. We've got a few records. Brad?
More specifically, what do you want to know?
What kind of music do you play? You're we're a hardcore band. That's what they say.
Maybe the guys will agree with this and maybe they won't, but the trifecta that I always say that is the Neapolitan ice cream that is Elephant Rifle is 80s hardcore, 90s noise rock, and 70s classic rock.
Yeah.
And so, hopefully it appeals to fans of bands like Jesus Lizard and Shellac, but also fans of Black Flag and also fans of ZZ Top. And that's kind of the like Venn diagram that we're kind of aiming for. I think what ends up happening is that we have just enough of those other bands to alienate people who would normally like one of those bands. Sorry, I'm used to eating the microphone.
I've seen that before.
I will eat it. We had a thing that we're like, you know, we're too punk for people who like, you know, metal, and we're too heavy for people who like punk, and we're too sloppy for people who like prog, and we're too tech for people who like drunks, and you know, like we end up like kind of alienating everybody by being not quite enough of any one thing. But that's what we like, because you know, we're all dudes who like lots of different kinds of music and like to play lots of different kinds of music and have a lot of different interests, and I think that comes across a little bit in our ability to alienate wide swaths of people from various directions.
You guys just came out with an album this last... Was it this last year that Ivory was released?
Yeah,
in
it was
2015?
It was in May of 2015. It was a joint release between Humanitarist, which is the label I started 10 years ago, and some friends of ours who just started a label basically to release our album, which was pretty cool that they believed in us enough to want to throw a bunch of loot behind it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the Humanitarist. Is that the Record Collective?
Yeah, Humanitarist Record Collective. I started that in 2005 to put out...
Gentlemen's Friends.
That's right. That's right. I'm talking about Gentlemen Friends is the other label.
Okay.
And it's a friend of ours who lives here in Reno, and then a friend of ours that lives in Austin started it. Yeah, it's cool. It's I'm really proud of that record. I think like as far as a microcosm of what Elephant Rifle does on like a physical. What you know, some piece of some physical medium, I think it's the best thing we've ever done. It's the thing I'm the most proud of. I think it covers all of our bases very well, like that sort of trifecta that Brad was talking about. Like it hits all of those notes. Yeah, I don't know. Anything you want to say about it?
Sure, it's called Ivory, which is a band name that connects, or it's an album title that connects to the band name, and. You know, we try to write some fun stuff and some funny stuff and some like party music and that kind of thing too. But that record, for some reason, we were writing some really like dark and heavier kind of songs. And I noticed thematically that I was writing lyrics that were about a lot more about mortality than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was using a lot more like. Animal imagery. So there's you know a song called Dogs, Wolves, Wolverines. There's a song called Horses, and there's this like recurring animal imagery, and then this recurring like stuff like fixating on aging and mortality and getting older and getting. But anyway, so there's this all this animal imagery and all this like mortality, aging, dying kind of themes in there. So a way to connect back to the band name. You know, was to call it Ivory, which is a, we knew we wanted to have a one word title, and I'm pretty proud of that as an album title. Because you know, I've often grappled with the fact a little bit that we've named the band after a gun.
Yeah,
you know, which is one of those things where it's like, I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily a violent person, which is also something like
or a hunter or anything like that.
Yeah, so it's like the idea, you know, I've shot guns before, and it can be. A really fun thing to do, but I'm not necessarily anti-gun, or I'm not anti-gun at all. But like having that kind of violent name has always been something that's been a little bit like not problematic for me, but just it's been something I've been aware of. And like, how do you reconcile that with not being a violent person? And you know, to have that actually like reflect back on that in the band name and be like, all right, well, you know, this is something that. Echoes the name with this terrible, terrible thing. I mean, the very idea of a material that we use is like for building things, you know, or for pianos decorative. Or for decorative things. Yeah. And it's the fact that it's this material, like you would say, like iron or, you know, whatever. I mean, elephants are so fucking beautiful. And rhinoceroses too, which get a lot of ivory comes from rhinos. And I mean, and both those animals are such beautiful animals. And they're endangered, you know, and the fact that, you know, there's this, you know, in China, it's what do you call it when it's a cure-all, a panacea?
Sure.
A panacea. Like, it's sold as this, like, medication that's supposed to, like, cure things.
Really?
It's total, like, witch medicine stuff. Yeah, it's complete
that's
bullshit.
That's fucking gross. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. It's some terrible shit. So there's this huge... This huge market for ivory as like a panacea slash aphrodisiac in China. So they kill these endangered animals to extract the substance that's supposed to be beautiful. And it's this really, really terrible, terrifying thing. And, you know, it seems like to meditate on that and to fixate on that and to make some kind of commentary about that.
So that's what you did with the album?
Yeah, specifically when I started, you know, it's funny when you're making a record, you don't necessarily, you know, the songs that were on that record were written over the course of 2 or 3 years, right?
Okay.
About that.
Yeah. Two or three years, and you know, you don't necessarily notice the themes that you're writing on. you know, when you're writing lyrics.
It's like a subconscious thing.
It's like a subconscious thing. But when you start noticing that, you start making some of those connections, and then you're able to tie that together, hopefully, with some of the last lyrics you write, you know. Mm. One of my, like, mottos for songwriting is that if you always write the same way, you end up writing the same kind of song over and over again.
Mm.
So we vary it up. You know, sometimes we write songs that come out of jams. Sometimes we write songs that Clint comes and he's got, like, I got a whole song, like 90% written, you know, or Mike does, or I do. Mm-hmm. And or, you know, sometimes it comes like somewhere in between that, where it's like, you know, Clint's got a couple of riffs and we kind of structure it together or something like that. Like, so every song on the that we try to write differently. And it's the same with the lyrics, where some of the songs, you know, I wrote the lyrics like months and months ago and really labored over them. Some of them I was like basically half improvising in the studio. Some of them I wrote after we were like almost done with the rest of the record. Because you're able, when you write from different points in time and in different ways, you start to, you notice different things and you think about it in different kind of ways. You
should also mention like how your process works with, it's the sound first.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, you trying to put some lyrics to what we've already done.
Yeah.
We'll be playing some music and Brad will do this sort of thing that I really like, being in a band with someone like a vocalist like this, that it's, whether it's, you know, gibberish or some actual words or whatever, it's the sound first.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's an onomatopoeia. Like,
and he can even like be screaming something or whatever it is. Like, it just, the sound fits. Like, it's the vocals as an instrument first, not as like I'm bringing this vocal concept to it, and which has brought about tunes like Gold Standard, which has some kind of goofy lyrics, but
that came after
they
the
fit. But it was just coincidentally what he was singing anyway.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's and, where I just kept him.
Okay. And we kind of talked about it, and it was like, you know what? That's kind of a good, like what you're already saying, sort of is a good song, like concept
and it just
in the first place.
Fit
like
within it.
Yeah. Like, why don't you keep those and then develop them from there? This little silly, kind of seems like it's silly to him, even, you know, he's like, oh, I got to change these lyrics.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, no, actually, I don't think you do.
Yeah.
But then you can add to it and then make it a real thing, you know? So that instinctive thing that we capture when we're writing tunes, whether it's the music that's being improvised or the way that Brad adds to it, it's, you know, a lot of it comes from a place that is really honestly improvised and then fine-tuned, you know.
Something I didn't even think about until just right now, hearing you talk about Ivory and then you talk about Gold Standard, is how that, I think that song still fits if the album can be called a concept album or have like some kind of vibe or whatever. It's like, we were just talking about how Ivory is like this opulent thing, and the lyrics of Gold Standard are basically just like a celebration of like dumb, excessive opulence.
Yeah, totally.
It's weird.
Guess who bought a boat?
Yeah. I just didn't put that. I didn't put that together till right now.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Well, but then when you know, like Mike's saying, I love to improvise vocally. Like, and it's partly because this is the first band I've ever been in where I'm not also playing an instrument, and I've loved that because I'm a better singer than I am a guitar player.
Okay.
And not having to try to play an instrument and like try to focus on that has been really liberating for me to be able to, you know, because I'm a writer too, in like write words and stuff all the time.
Right.
So to be able to really focus on just that part of it and just the lyrics and just thinking about how the song should fit and where the vocal line should go and to improvise vocally is really, really liberating for
me. It frees you up a little bit to be like, oh, I don't have to
worry about trying to come up with a guitar part or anything like that.
Right.
And you know, and these guys, Mayhall and Clint and Young, they write instrumentally, they write the kind of parts that I like. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes they'll do stuff that I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have thought to do it that way, but I fucking love it. And sometimes they do like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to hear. You know, and that like mix of stuff is perfect. But it's like when writing lyrics, you know, sometimes I do what, like what Mayhall was saying, where I'm improvising in the studio and I just keep those words. And then sometimes I refine them a lot over time. And then sometimes I'm just writing, I change up the approach a lot. And with Ivory, you know, it's like when I started to really notice the themes that were really emerging out of the lyrics and making these connections, then one of the last things that I wrote for the album was the song Skeleton Key, which is
Ivory Keys.
Yeah, it's explicitly about the album title and the lyrical themes, and I was able to just kind of all tie it together. And that song almost sounds like a throwaway, and it's kind of buried, but it's sort of like...
It's a good last song to put
on. The Rosetta Stone. Well, it's the, well, it's not the last song. It's the in the sequence of it, but it's the, like, the Rosetta Stone for, like, translating the sort of themes in it. And then all this shit might be, like, fucking some deep-ass close listening stuff.
This is a fucking deep conversation, familiar. Too.
You know, we're fucking weirdos like this shit, man.
So in talking about this, like, this sort of deep, you know, it almost encrypted shit in the album.
Yeah.
Another thing that, like, we thought that, and maybe it's just because not enough people have listened to the fucking record, but one thing that we thought people were going to catch on to, that I think Margot is the only person to catch, is that the record begins and ends with the same chord progression.
Yeah, so there's little musical connections like that.
Yeah.
But on the beginning of the record, it's played on piano, and on the end of the record, it's played on guitar.
Played with full band.
Full band.
The harmony is also a little bit different, but whatever. That's
It's still basically the same.
Man, I derailed it with that. We were on such a roll, and I was like, and another thing.
it's a little bit different, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
There's just a major chord in a different place, you know, kind of. So you guys recorded the album in Sacramento at what, the Doc Studios?
Correct.
With
so
Robert Cheek.
Sauce Master Floss.
Can't read my writing.
So
okay.
He
was actually an integral part of that recording in a lot of ways. As well was Mike Modine, who came to the recording sessions like starting on the second day, right?
Yeah.
When we were really getting going. It's always nice to have people either on the engineering end or just an extra friend that knows the kind of music to give you a little outside perspective of what you're doing.
Somebody that's not in the band.
Right.
Yeah, to help out.
'Cause we can all do that ourselves to a certain extent, but, you know, your ears are getting overworked and that kind of stuff, and you might just not be noticing something, or somebody might have a real good idea about, oh, let's use this amp, or here, let me mess with your pedal, or whatever it is.
That's what engineers and producers do. Yeah. Or producers, yeah, right. Help with that kind
of
stuff.
So we did have some help with both Floss, Robert Cheek, and also Mike Modine, that really kind of helped us, like, think about what we were doing with that record.
How long did it take you guys to record the whole record?
We did the whole thing 3 days. Well, the primary tracking was all done in 3 days. And just really quick to get back to what Mike was saying, both of those guys have a production credit on the record, and it's like 100% earned. Yeah, I mean, there's ideas that they had. The way the intro of the last song is recorded was a way that I had just recently started playing it, and Floss really tapped into, like, oh, here's how we're going to record this in such a way that lends itself to the way you play it live. Whereas, like, I know, I mean, we recorded that guitar in like a stairwell sort of thing. It's like, I never would have thought of that kind of thing. But So the primary tracking was done in 3 days. And then Floss mixed those songs. And then the very first track, at the time, our drummer was Ty Williams, who also helped us write, you know, most of those songs, all of those songs. He recorded that first track at the Holland Project, and that's he just had this like this little like field recorder thing, and he set it up in the art gallery, and then he wheeled the piano to like the end of the stage, and then I set up like way back by the sound booth, and I was just like cranking out all this noise and everything while he played that piano chord that chord progression that's at the end of the record. Yeah, so he played that and recorded the whole thing. And then the song Skeleton Key that we were talking about, the aforementioned Mike Modine, who was there to produce the record with us, recorded that song in his basement like 2 or 3 months after we did the recording on that. It's because as we were recording it, we kind of had an idea of like what the sort of, where, you know, where the vibe was going. I mean, before we started the album, we had something completely different in mind. And once you start, I mean, projects like those kind of take on a life of their own when you're in the thick of it. And that album definitely did. And while we were recording it, we started to like ruminate on these ideas and see where we were going. And once we kind of had a finished product, we're like, there is a theme here that we didn't really consider. And it would be cool to have something that ties everything up. And so that's why we did that song Skeleton Key afterwards. Right. And that was, the music for that was a largely improvised piece that I did. Like, all the instrumentation is done by me on that, which is weird. Yeah. it's weird for me to not, like, I'm so used to being part of a band.
Right,
to,
you
like,
don't play that live. You don't have a piano when you guys play live.
Or two guitars and a bass guitar all being played by the same person.
Kind of thing. So that was mainly meant just for the record, essentially.
Yeah, well, yeah. But all this, all the rest of the tunes are tunes that we recorded them the way that we sound when we play live. There are some things that I might have had to go back and correct, or that Clint added an extra track or whatever, that kind of stuff. But most of it is a very live record. It sounds the way that we sound live. But then there are these other little linking pieces that...
Do you mean like you recorded live, or did you do individual tracks?
No, we recorded that live.
Oh, it was totally live recorded.
Absolutely.
Oh, except for the vocals were later.
Except for the vocals. See, the vocals were done afterwards.
And a few guitar.
And songs where there are more than one guitar track, because I'm the only guitar player. But I mean, half the music on that record is, you know, live. A lot of it, man, I can think of...
Live to tape.
Yeah, so seriously.
Analog.
Well, and this is something that brings up something that I wanted to bring up. The reason I think the album's as good as it is because we did a lot of pre-production on the album. I mean, we demoed all those songs. We practiced our ass off 3-4 times a week for like a month leading up to that. Like when we got in there, we were dolphin's asshole tight. And it was like, when you go to tape, you can't fuck around. You have to be on top of it. So it was just all around. It was a really magical experience, and I'm glad I got to share it with these guys and with Ty and Robert and Odin.
Yeah, and I want to. I mean, we've mentioned him a little bit now, but I just want to give, you know, some props to Ty. He lives in New York now and isn't in the band anymore. But he's a guy who helped us write those songs and contributed so much, and like is you know, a guy that we all love so much, and you know. It was such a great experience. You know, he was in the band from like 2011 to 2015. 16, he did a tour with us this summer and contributed so much to the songwriting. And, you know, we wrote so many great tunes with him and stuff. And I was really like happy to work with him. And it's been neat because we're you know, kind of transitioning now because Young is such a great drummer, but he's a different kind of drummer. You think that the fucking singer would not forget how to hold the mic? But
hold the mic.
Anyway, we're writing new material right now with Mike Young, who's a different kind of drummer than Ty, and the songs that we're writing now are, it's a very different kind of vibe, and it's like we're still kind of seeing where it goes.
Yeah, he used to be in Saddle Tramps.
Yeah, he was in Saddle Tramps. He was in
which are kind of like rockabilly.
Sisters Doom until really recently, which was a great band. He was in a band called Them Sons of Bitches a few years ago that we all really liked, or that I really liked.
It rings a bell. Yeah,
yeah, and he's just a really great drummer. He was also the sound guy at
the alley.
He's the manager at Cargo now. Production manager at Cargo.
Oh, okay.
And he's one of those guys. To me, you know, with drummers especially, you know, chops are one thing, and you can have a drummer with great chops, but really great drummers are guys that understand songs and understand kind of like the role of drums within songs.
And that's definitely Ty's greatest strength.
Yeah, and Ty's a songwriter. I mean, and he's also got a band that. Called My Flag Is on Fire that Mayhall played in for years.
I love My Flag Is on Fire.
Yeah, and so Ty knows how to write a fucking song. I mean, and he's a great songwriter, and that makes him a great drummer because he has a really good sense of song. But I think Young has it too, where he's like aware of not just what the drum part should be and what the drums should be, but what else is happening in the song.
Yeah, knowing your space and knowing your role in the band, and not showboating or
drummers especially. Sometimes you got a guy who's got great chops, but doesn't necessarily understand, you know, where a song is, you mm-hmm. know, or where his place in the song is, or what the structure of the song is, you know, things like dynamics and structure.
Well, and whereas if when something isn't just understood right off the bat, there's no like weirdness within talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, if it, hey, I'm not really feeling what is going on there. Maybe we should change this part of this tune.
Oh, well, fuck you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I play my own shit, bro.
Can you try it a different way, please? Ah.
Yeah, we're all older.
Throwing drum sticks at your head. And
we're all guys who've been playing in bands for years and have enough humility to understand that sometimes we're going to have ideas that don't work. And sometimes we're going to need to be able to talk through things. And if somebody says, hey, what you're doing on this isn't really working for me, be like, oh, okay, interesting. You know, be more like receptive to that and not get our feelings hurt.
Yeah, being more open.
Yeah.
Well, and also I, you know, have figured out how to play more correctly, in my opinion, some of the music that we've been playing for years. Like, one day it'll just be like, oh, I get this part now. Like, here's a way better to play it, way to play it, and then I'll show them, and they're like, oh, okay, maybe I'll change what I'm doing too. Like. Right. These things are always in flux, you know, because when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, if you feel that when you're playing live, it's like, eh, this could be better. There's something, I'm missing something here.
Yeah.
And you're growing. And then you figure out what it is one day. Maybe it's when you're playing live, maybe when you're in the rehearsal space or whatever. And, you know, the way I've been playing this thing for a long time becomes obsolete now because I figured out a better way to do it. Mm. And like that's our own thing that we can tell each other how to, hey, I'm not really feeling that. I don't like it when you do that, or I don't like it when I do this. So what should I do? Do you guys like this better, or do you like this better?
It's for the sake of the music, you know, to make the music what it should be. You know?
I think that comes from being song oriented. So when you think about like, okay, you know, like the question I think about all the time is what makes a good song. And what does this song need? And when you do it that way and you think about the song and your role in the song, then you get less egotistical about your own performance. You get less egotistical about your own part, and you get more like, okay. You know, like as a vocalist, I mean, these guys are doing interesting shit all the time. So there's times where I'm like, I don't need to sing anything there. You know, I can just hang out. You know, and they're going to be doing great shit, and I don't have to even worry about it. Mm-hmm. But that takes a little bit of humility in a way. And because you have to be able to recognize that and be able to know when to step back. And even for the instrumentalist, I think that that's the case. And being aware of the overall kind of structure of things and where you fit in and how to communicate that with your bandmates and also communicate that to an audience. You know, it's something that takes years of refinement. And, you know, it's something that I think that we've learned some of how to do, but we can always learn more of, you know.
The years of refinement thing is interesting because that's what I was just thinking about right now. It's like... So this band has existed for almost 7 years and existed as a four-piece for almost 6 years. And I really only think it's been in the last couple years that we've figured out, like, how to be a band and, like, how to be good at what we do. Like, I think that time is really sort of key. At least it was for us. I mean, maybe it's not for every band, but it definitely was for us. Like, we're a vastly different band than we were, you know, when we first started, or than we were 3 years ago or whatever. And it's like we also put out material in that time, and I'm proud of that material too. But when I listen to it now, I, at least personally, I don't hear like a confidence or a level of skill that I know exists now. And I don't know, like, I don't even know if, as I'm saying that, I'm like, oh, am I doing a disservice to our old shit that people like or whatever? But it's like, I don't know how to unpack all this.
Right.
Well, and with respect to the older stuff, like, there are some tunes that Scott wrote that I play verbatim what he played, because
it was legit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's fucking nailed it. That's that song. And there might be a little thing I tweak here or there just for my own comfort or for whatever kind of decision I'm making about it. But, you know, the way that Scott played some of these tunes that we still play, or the way that Ty played some of the tunes that we still play, and the way that Mike Young is playing those or whatever, like, some of them we make it our own, and some of them we just kind of leave it alone because it's it's already a great tune. Like, mm-hmm. just because it's an old tune doesn't mean we need to rework it. However, recently we have reworked a tune of ours that will be on our next record that we haven't even actually released.
Was it the Split?
No, so we were on this comp put out by Aeolian Empire, which is a great label out of Portland. This dude, Josh Hughes, who was in the band The VSS and in the band Pleasure Forever, which, have I told you guys this story about how, so we put out this comp with this guy. This guy approached us, and I was familiar with his label. He puts out records by our friends in this band, Drunk Dad, from Portland. And I was like, yeah, dude, this label's legit. Like, this guy's fucking cool. He wants to put out our shit. Cool, let's do it. Let's work with this guy. And, right. and like, started a relationship with this guy. This was, like, almost 2 years ago. Or over 2 years ago. Because it was before Ty moved. And Ty's been gone for over 2 years. So we started this relationship with this guy. Like, I'm friends with him on Facebook. We talk all the time and stuff. And it wasn't until about, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago that I realized, oh shit, this is the same Josh Hughes that was in the VSS and Pleasure Forever, which is like one of my favorite bands of all time. And like, I've got this album that like it was the first album I bought when I started working at Tower when I was 19. And I have this album memorized, and I've stared at the cover, and I like know exactly what he looks like as, you know, as him 15 years ago on the cover of this album. And it was just this weird sort of like lightning bolt to the head sort of thing. It's like, whoa, that's the same guy. Like, I'm friends with that guy. I've been working with that guy for over a year. That's the same guy.
That's crazy.
I know, it was a trip. But anyway, yeah, long sidebar to what you were saying. Yes, it's on this comp.
You know what's cool is I really like the fact that you guys talk so intricately and seriously about your music. Like, because when you listen to your music, if people aren't into like the hardcore, like screaming fucking shit, like you guys are like a pulverizing fucking band. But you guys talk about your music so intricately.
Are you saying we take ourselves too seriously? Is that what
No.
Because it kind of sounds like you're saying we take ourselves too seriously.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you guys, I really enjoy like the fact that you guys are so passionate about what you fucking do. And I think a lot of musicians, take that for granted a lot of times.
I think that leads to, like what Brad was talking about earlier with the Venn diagram of what we think we sound like or what, you know, whatever. That's just what we sound like as the band. Mm-hmm. What we all listen to is all over the place. Like the Venn diagram of every person who's ever been in this band, which is not that many people, but
honestly, I would say like of all the music that all members past and present of this band listen to, hardcore is probably like not even close to it's somewhere in the middle.
But it's somehow where we meet up, you know.
It's the common denominator.
I mean, I wasn't even in the band at the time. We were having a different conversation when this came up because it was a kind of a ridiculous conversation. But they were talking about in the van once. How many hardcore bands do you think are listening to Philip Glass right now? Just us and Neurosis. You know, I wasn't even in the band then, like, but that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with. We were making some joke some morning about it's too late for coffee, but it's too early for whiskey. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "What would you say?" Like,
I said, sometimes you're in the mood for herbal tea and Joni Mitchell, and sometimes you're in the mood for whiskey and Neurosis. we're very eclectic in our tastes, and I think. We draw on a lot of different things, and it's like, you know, I take the lyric craft, you know, writing lyrics really, really, really seriously.
Yeah,
and maybe too seriously, you know, for the fact that
really quick breaking news: we're opening an 11.4% beer.
Ooh,
11.8.
Here, let me have a swig for it
to wash this down.
But 9 times out of 10, that is really fruity and weird.
9 times out of 10, that's really fruity and weird.
Yeah, and I mean fruity in that. I didn't even like edit apricots, that. Apricots, yeah. Not fruity as in any kind of
that tastes big as fuck.
Homophobic way.
Yeah, that is a big beer.
But I take writing lyrics really, really clear, really, really seriously, even though a lot of people don't hear what I'm saying. Can't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, like most of the time you're just like, oh, he's just screaming.
You know, and it's like, we pride ourselves on being a great band, a great live band, you know, and putting on that good show and really bringing it as far as that goes. And I think that that's probably what people know us for mostly, if anything. But, you know, we put a lot of craft into the songwriting and the album crafting and all that stuff. I mean, we take all that stuff really, really seriously. Mm. And it is because we come from traditions that where we draw on, you know, a lot of different kinds of music. Mm. You know, I'm really into, like, you know, great songwriters like Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and, like, people like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really into, you know, Mayhall has a jazz background. He plays in great jazz groups and is great, you know, musician from really eclectic array of music. And Clint's just a big fucking nerd. And, you know, we're able to, you know, we draw on these other things, even though we meet in this kind of music that's mostly about performance and mostly about presenting, a live show that's really volatile. Yeah. And we're able to bring that, but the craft that we put into it, you know, whether people notice it or not, is mm-hmm. fucking there. And the musicianship is there, and the songcraft is there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, if we were just a band that put on a crazy live show, you know, that'd be one thing, but we've got the songs to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it's, if we're on the road, though, we're listening to Run the Jewels.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we listen to a lot of hip hop. We listen to all kinds of shit. I mean, we're all guys who are real. I mean, it's not. We listen to Philip Glass on the road.
Well, and if you have that background of just listening to music and exposing yourself to that, you consciously and subconsciously just absorb everything. You soak it up like a fucking sponge. It just comes through your music like that.
Yeah. No.
I had
something I wanted to say, but
I'm gonna say is yeah.
Yes.
God, I forgot about
soak
it, man.
Soak that shit up.
So it's third act, and we're into our second, 10+ beer. Like things are gonna start slipping.
It's gonna get fucking.
But if
weird
you want
now.
Us to say some goofy ass shit, we can say some goofy ass shit. Is
yeah.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, we.
So. I think with the kind of
sound bites.
I think with the kind of music that we play, it's easy for lyricists to kind of like work in like tropes and just kind of like do some easy pastiche shit. And I really appreciate that Brad doesn't do that. I mean, he's literally one of my favorite lyricists of all time, not just like because I'm in a band with him, but because I fucking really admire what he does. I mean, I think that, like, especially bands, that are of a, like, fucking, I'm telling you, those. Maybe we shouldn't have been drinking beers in this. Whatever.
No. That makes it more fun.
But bands that are, like, kind of a more punk background, it is really easy to kind of, like, I don't even know if phone it in is the right thing. I think it's just like
situate yourself in punkdom or whatever.
It's easy to get kind of dopey with the lyrics because I think maybe a lot of dudes are dopey. I don't know, but it's like you can have some fucking boring ass, tired lyrics. And Brad, in the 6 years that I've been working with him, has never once done that. And that's something I really appreciated. And even if he is just screaming at the top of his lungs, like, I feel like that comes through, that it's just not a bunch of tired shit in there.
To the people, like, actually listening, too.
Yeah.
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 Well,
so it's.
I did some research on you guys ahead of time, and I read a lot of great reviews and articles, like, from. What was that shit called?
The Reno News and Review.
No. Yeah, Reno News and Review.
What did Kramer.com have to say about it?
Wait, was there ever like a Reno News and Review article on Elephant Rifle at some point?
Well, I wrote a tour diary once.
Okay.
And that was like the very first year we were a band. And it was like the first real tour that I'd ever been on. So I wrote a tour diary. And my goal with it, to avoid it being too like self-glamorizing,
right,
was to make it as depressing as possible. So I just wrote about all like the saddest things that happened and really tried to be self-deprecating.
Like the Steely Dan review of like Coachella, even though they were playing Coachella.
Okay, that Steely Dan Coachella review that you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the crazy fucking things that he said. Did you read that?
No, I have no idea what you said.
All right, so they played. They
it's like Rolling Stone or some shit or Spin.
It was this year they played.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they posted
or maybe
that.
Maybe it was last year. I don't know.
They posted it up, and it was like this weird like classic rock version of Coachella, right? And so the headliners were
like Guns N' Roses, Steely Dan.
And AC/DC.
I'm pretty sure that was this year.
That was this year.
Yeah. Donald Fagen wrote a like tour diary of playing on Coachella.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that he wrote on there was this thing about how he had never actually heard AC/DC before.
Yeah, like, oh, AC/DC, what is this?
I don't buy that for one.
Which I don't buy. And so
I think he's just fucking with the readers at that point.
Totally. Because the motherfucker is sarcastic as shit.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The motherfucker is a total liar, total sarcastic, total fucking satirist. Just fucking with you all the time.
So we can expect the Donald Fagen presidency in 4 years.
So he wrote this thing. He's like, you know, I've never heard AC/DC. I mean, sure, I've heard of them, but I'd never actually listened to AC/DC. And our friend Pete posted that up on Facebook. So then I wrote this like long thing where I was like satirizing Donald Fagen's like fucking shitty sarcastic voice, where I was like, I've never eaten pizza. I mean, sure, I've heard of pizza, and I know all the kids eat pizza. This pizza is this weird food that's got
dough
like bread and
sauce.
You know, because it's like, motherfucker, you've heard AC/DC. You live in goddamn America. You've heard motherfucking AC/DC.
You live on goddamn planet Earth. You've heard AC/DC. Yeah. They're not even from America. They're the biggest band in America.
Yeah. We love AC/DC.
we used to cover AC/DC.
Yeah,
you guys did a Steely Dan cover too, like a 7 to 9 minute long.
No, that wasn't Steely Dan.
Oh no,
that was Rush.
It was a Rush. It was a Rush cover.
Do not you besmirch Rush's good name.
Oh my bad.
By confusing them with Steely Dan.
My bad.
Wait, we will have words, my friend.
I got.
Breaking news!
Breaking news. Mike Young is on the cusp of Gemini and Cancer.
Is that after they've updated the horoscope lines just recently?
I don't know.
He might be looking at a website.
So who the fuck cares?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it was Toilet of Hell. Was like a metal
those
blog.
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah. That I
they,
read.
They're big on us. They had this goofy contest where it was like. Who's the best band, the best unsigned metal band or heavy band in America?
Right.
And they said that we were the one from Nevada. And then they like pitted the bands together in this sort of like
NCAA
bracket. Yeah, like an NCAA bracket.
Like a Final Four bracket.
So silly, but we're like, all right, fuck it. We'll play along. and it was fun. It was fun to like kind of watch things. And we made it way further than I thought we would have. I mean, we made it to like the Sweet 16.
No, you fucking, you won.
No,
it said the best band in Nevada.
Yeah, we won.
Yeah.
We're the best band in Nevada, but we didn't win in the country.
The States, I think we did get to 16.
We made it way further than I thought. It's like, what the fuck are... Because I listened to the bands that we were up against. There's some pretty fucking good bands on that thing. So.
Yeah, there were also some very whack bands.
That's also true.
Won't name names.
So you guys are in the middle of writing an album right now.
It's pretty much done. What do we got, like one or two more songs? And we're really close to being done.
With the writing part of it.
We're starting to kick around recording dates, and I think it's going to be in the earlier half of next year.
Okay.
That we'll have the new one recorded.
And are you going on tour after that?
One of the frustrations for us, you know, as far as like getting good publicity, getting good reviews and all that. And we've done two full lengths, a mixtape, a single, an EP. We've done a lot of recording, but we don't get to tour nearly as much as we'd like. Because it's like we all got...
You guys are busy. You got lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, Clint and I both have kids. Young has kids. We got kids. We got jobs. You know, I'm the editor of a newspaper. Clint owns a beer shop.
Yeah.
You know, we've got, like, lots of, like, grown-up commitments that make it really hard to be able to plan tours.
Adulting.
Yeah. And so it's like we're just able to do a lot of what we call weekend strikes, where we go play a couple of dates out in California or a couple of dates up in the Northwest, and not nearly as much like kind of widespread touring as we'd like to be able to do, to be able to really capitalize on recording, you know, really great albums that we're really proud of, that we're get positive reviews for it and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we'd like to be able to do that, but we have so many commitments that just prohibit us from doing that. But that doesn't prohibit us from when we do play out of town shows or we do get to tour, not bringing it, because we always do. And, you know, we put as much, you know, like I said, songcraft and musicianship into writing the songs, recording the songs as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. So it's like, just because, you know, we can't tour as much as we would like, doesn't mean we don't try to fully fucking capitalize on that when we do.
Well, and you still have, you know, the local Reno music scene here to play at a bunch of great venues here in town. And
yeah. Nice thing about Reno, though, is that it's a big enough town that there's a scene here, and a small enough town that you can be invested in a lot of different kind of ways. And you can really spread that across. And I think we've benefited from that really well. And I think a great, perfect example of that is our next two shows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're playing with Planes, Mistaken for Stars, and Fall Silent, and the, you know, two great kind of more in the hardcore kind of vein bands. And, you know, we're really excited about that. And then we're also playing with Moondog Matinee, who are like a classic.
That's a weird
rock
mashup
band.
of a show. Well, when I first saw the flyer for that.
The people from Reno and all of our friends together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's so many mutual friends between all of us. Yeah. That show is going to be crazy. Just all the people who know each other who are going to be there. That's going to be a big collection of people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be
and then
the same.
Whatever else, whoever I haven't met yet, or, you know.
Yeah, it just, stylistically, it may seem a little, like, weird that we're playing together, but those dudes are total sweethearts, like, very good friends of ours. Mostly just boils down to, like, we just want to play a show with our friends.
Yeah. Well, I had Dre and Jake Houston here for one of the podcasts.
Oh, those guys are so great. We love it. We love those guys.
Salt of the fucking earth.
But one of the things that's great about playing, you know, with Moondog is it's like, you know, that, I think in a larger... One of the great things about Reno is that, you know, you go to a bigger city and it's like the punk scene is so fragmented, and like even the punk scene and the hardcore scene don't talk to each other, and the hardcore scene and the metal scene don't talk to each other, and let alone the hip hop scene or like the jazz scene.
Yeah, everybody
like,
seems so separate.
Totally separate. And what's great about Reno is it's a small enough town that we know people in every part of the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. And we know people in the country bands, and we know people.
Like we're all homies with Jake Houston.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are in
other bands.
In multiple genres.
We cross over to this other stuff. And so when we do a show, like playing with Moondog is great for us because we love those guys as people. And they're good friends of ours. And playing with them is great because it's like they have their audience and we have our audiences.
Yeah.
And they're separate a little bit, but there's a lot of crossover, and the people who are like more Elephant Rifle fans will see Moondog and be like, oh, cool. And it's been a few years since we played with them.
They'll be like, I wouldn't think about going to this kind of show, but vice versa.
But they're stoked. Yeah. And then vice versa. And we benefit from getting to play in front of people who haven't seen us, but who dig us. Mm-hmm. And so does Moondog, because our audiences have a weird amount of crossover, because people in Reno are fucking open-minded because they're used to having a small scene.
The crossover is more about the people than it is the type of music.
Some we probably should have covered like at the top, but so historically how Elephant Rifle started was Brad and I in 2008, 2009.
I don't care how you guys start. No,
one of those years. No, we went and saw Jesus Lizard when they were doing their reunion tour in San Francisco.
Not tell that origin story.
Okay, never mind. Origin story's done.
It started totally original creation, not ripping anybody's shit off.
If you listen to Jesus Lizard, it's a pretty audible.
So Chinese food or pizza? If you had to pick one.
Brad doesn't know what pizza is. We went over this.
Yeah.
You know what pizza is?
That was Donald Fagan.
That was that thing.
My answer for that.
This is a former pizza chef extraordinaire, by the way.
Oh, shit.
Frozen, shitty pizza. It's still pizza. Shitty Chinese food, not a good idea.
Yeah.
So.
True that.
It's got to be pizza.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you coming over, having some beers, having some conversation about music. I love your band, and looking forward to seeing your shows coming up in the future. But before we go, do you guys want to say any last words?
I think it's going to be tough to beat Mayhall's last thoughts on pizza. That's just pretty fucking brilliant.
That's kind of tough.
That's pretty deep.
Deep cuts.
He's forcing us to drink Michelob Ultra over here, you guys.
No.
Save us. Save us, please.
My friend brought
save
that
us,
over.
Please. We're at street on in Reno, Nevada. Save us.
Well, guys, thanks for coming over and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Thank you for listening to that episode with Elephant Rifle. We really appreciate it. We had a lot of fun drinking beer and talking about their music. If you hear this show, this podcast in time, be sure to check out Elephant Rifle live at the Saint in Reno with Moondog Matinee on December 23rd. It's going to be a great show. We have a link to their Bandcamp page here on our post, or you can just Google Elephant Rifle. I'm sure you can find anything about them. So anyway, this is Dave with All Independent Reno Podcast. Subscribe and rate us. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.